Yes, ma'am.
A couple of campaign-related questions.
Yes.
2 weeks from Election Day. In the president's appearances this week and next week, are we going to hear anything new in his message, or has he really solidified the message going forward?
I think you'll continue to hear the president make a very strong and affirmative case for continuing to move the country forward and the perils of what it means to go back. That's, I think, been the basis of his message for quite a while. I think you'll continue to hear that.
So we're not going to see him try to roll out another message? Okay. And then looking at this Western swing, mm-hmm. Boxer and Reed and Murray, those are candidates that the president has been campaigning for pretty frequently, the First Lady is, Biden has. What is it about those three races that has the White House so interested?
They're all important races. They're important votes in the Senate. They're important races. President knows each one of them from his work and their work in the Senate, and is anxious to go out and campaign for all three of them.
Does the president feel like he can be more effective in those states than states like Arkansas or West Virginia?
Look, I think the president, if you look at, has campaigned in states throughout the country. You know, just this past weekend, we were in Ohio. I think people tend to forget that before Governor Patrick, there was 16 years of Republican governors in the state of Massachusetts. Not exactly easy gubernatorial territory, at least in the recent past, for Democrats. So the president's going to go and hit a lot of places. The vice president, the first lady, they'll all hit important races as we head into head to the finish of the campaign season.
Is there anything you can tell us about his schedule for next week? What states
will
be hitting? Yes, sir.
Robert, is the White House concerned that some banks are lifting their foreclosure freezes too soon?
Well, Jeff, as you saw the statement that that I put out, there is an ongoing process through FHA, started before this round of stories, where we had concerns and wanted to ensure that services are complying fully with the laws of this country. Tomorrow at HUD, there's a meeting of regulators, including Secretary Donovan, Secretary Geithner, Tom Perrelli from the Justice Department, to talk through sort of where we are on our look at this process, and that process, again, as I said, is will continue over the course of the next several weeks.
You mentioned your statement this morning. Was that the reason for your sending that fueled by any concern about this lifting of freezes happening too quickly?
Well, again, we are our concern has been ensuring that the process adequately complies with the law. That's what led, like I said, that's what led FHA to get involved in this. That's what's led the Financial Fraud Enforcement Task Force to be involved in this process, as well as our support for 50 state attorneys general, ensuring, again, compliance with the law. That is, obviously, that's tremendously important in this process. We have talked about, over the past week or so, the danger that we see in, though, halting the entire housing market, and the danger that it would provide, or potentially provide, writ large, and its effect on the economy.
It's still not clear to me if you think it's, are they lifting these freezes too soon, or is that not?
Well, again, we are looking at their process in order to determine their compliance with the law. Obviously, they have certain requirements under the law that have to be met, and if they're not meeting those requirements, they certainly can face fines from us, and they can face legal action from homeowners.
Did the president discuss this with the Secretary Geithner in their meeting today?
I don't know if this came up specifically. My guess is it likely did. The President's Economic Daily Briefing centered on this last week, and there have certainly been meetings with Secretary Donovan and others around this.
Is the President talking to any of his friends and contacts in the banking industry about this?
Nothing I'm aware of, no. Jake?
In a new ABC News Yahoo News poll, 55% of the American people say that Tea Party candidates can effectively bring about major changes in the way government operates. How did the president and the Democrats lose the mantle of change?
Well, I think if you're talking about repealing the minimum wage, that would be significant change. I think if you're talking about questioning the validity of whether Social Security should happen or whether there should be a Department of Education, I think that all qualifies significant change.
I said effectively bring about major changes.
That would effectively bring about major change. Jake, I'd have to look more closely at what the poll says. This is not necessarily in relation to the Tea Party, but I think there continues to be a frustration with the pace of our economic recovery, based largely on the fact that, as I've said before, the hole that we're in is huge. The number of jobs that we lost, 8 million or so jobs, the number of jobs we lost leading up to the last election is a significant amount.
And one other thing. Later this week, the administration is going to release a report on women in the economy. At the same time, President Obama will be campaigning for two embattled women senators, Murray and Boxer. Is there a relation between the two?
Well, no. I think, obviously, the president has been focused throughout this administration on our economic recovery, on ensuring that businesses have the credit they need to expand, and I think this is just a continuation of that concern and demonstrating what can and should be done to fix our economy.
Yeah. Mr. Robert, these monthly IPAC meetings, mm-hmm. and the President will have one tomorrow again, is this a chance to tweak the strategy in that region, or is it more of a comprehensive update for the President?
Well, I hesitate to say what the meeting would involve, since the meeting is tomorrow, in terms of its update. I think the president gets from both a military and diplomatic update on a weekly basis from that region of the world, and as you said, a monthly secure video teleconference with many of the same players to go about the developments in that region and to discuss where we are in several of our goals, including, and I'm sure the president will get, as he does, a regular update on where we are in our goals at training an Afghan national security force, both a police and an army. So I have a better sense of the tweaking part of that question after tomorrow's meeting.
But do these meetings tend, since he does have these weekly updates as well, I'm trying to get a sense of what kind of weight is given to these meetings that he has monthly. Is it broader? Is it more comprehensive?
Look, I will say this again without getting into a lot of specifics for a highly classified meeting. There are, obviously there's a broader perspective, and then there's granularity as you go through. And as commanders and our diplomatic representatives go through developments on the ground in different parts of the country. The president, as I said, gets that weekly, gets a fairly thick weekly update, and as well as this monthly teleconference. And depending on the range of issues that are confronting the situation, again, it can be very granular, it can be, I anticipate that at some point you'll be very granular, and then at some point you'll be much more at 30,000 feet.
And is the White House satisfied with what Pakistan is doing to go after the insurgency in its own country?
Well, obviously there's a Pakistani delegation here to continue the regular strategic dialogues that were begun in the spring of 2009. I think we see an unprecedented level of cooperation from the Pakistanis in taking on insurgents, because we understand, unlike in the past, it's now in our mutual well-being to do so. That having been said, Dan, throughout this process and throughout these meetings this week, there will be opportunities for us to detail for the Pakistanis what more must be done. That was clear in the report that was sent to Congress, and that's been clear in our statements about our relationship with Pakistan.
And one more question on Bill Clinton. I know last week you talked about how he's been able to go to some of these areas with a much smaller footprint than the president would if he traveled. But when you look at what his effectiveness might be for the midterm elections, how do you rate that? I mean, how?
Look, I think he is an effective voice for the Democratic Party. I think he's an effective voice for the steps that this administration has had to take to rescue the economy, to put ourselves back on a stable financial footing. He's a tremendous advocate.
Robert, what prompted the statement on foreclosures today?
We got a lot of interest off of what was going on with the process around Bank of America.
Is the president hearing from Speaker Pelosi or Majority Leader Reid saying, what about a moratorium nationally?
Well, again, we've obviously, Mark, been calls to do to freeze the process. Again, our concern has been what that effect is for the housing market in a broader sense. Take a state like Florida. About a little more than a third of the housing transactions that are going on right now are individuals who are purchasing long foreclosed, previously foreclosed homes. That's in many places what is beginning to spur a housing recovery in places that have been hit extremely hard with the housing crisis and the great dip in housing prices, which obviously leads to people being underwater in their mortgage and the economy writ large in its ability, in their ability to make those payments. So our concern with that moratorium is that a process that has followed all aspects of the law and is in the midst of a contract to purchase that from somebody else, that process is frozen too. We believe that, as I said in the statement, all servicers must comply with the law. They'll be held accountable if they don't. But at the same time, we see the downsides of what a moratorium could do to the larger housing market.
And what about the timing of the Hispanic education announcement today? Coming 2 weeks before the midterms, is there anything political in that?
No, I mean, look, there's this is a renewal of an executive order on the dropout rate in the education. The dropout rate in the Latino community is something that's been talked about for quite some time, and our efforts to ensure that we're doing all that we can as efficiently and effectively to address it and the other educational issues are done because it's the right thing to do, not because of the political count.
Robert, what does it mean to the president, to the White House agenda, to retain control, Democratic control in the Senate?
I think we have a common, we have a sense of what has to happen over the course of the next couple of years. We have to continue our economic recovery. The president had outlined in the past month or so ideas for cutting taxes on businesses as it relates to expensing and new purchases, our investments in construction and infrastructure that are tremendously important to getting things going. We understand that we have to take a look at and deal with our midterm and long-term financial picture. We have to implement the important reforms in both healthcare and in Wall Street reform. That is going to happen regardless of needs to happen regardless of the makeup of either body in the next 2 years.
You took some heat in July for a prediction about the election.
I didn't make a prediction in July.
Well, I guess you'd suggested the possibility that the Republicans could take control. So there's not a change of heart in terms of your analysis?
I think if you look back in the days after that, I said the same thing.
Is the president surprised that some of these Western races are tight?
I said this on Sunday as well. I think the political environment is driven because of our economic environment. We're at 9.6% unemployment. We've seen 8 million people lose their jobs. We've been dealing with a housing crisis for several years, all of which we're making progress on. Housing market largely stabilized. 9 months of private sector job growth. We're moving in the right direction. I think that's the president's message out on the campaign trail, because that's what we see as the facts on the ground.
Kentucky Senate race has gotten kind of nasty over a campaign ad about Rand Paul's religion when he was in college. Does the president think it's time to move on from digging into people's religion, particularly in their youth? Or
I've not seen the ad. I have not talked to the president about the ad.
You guys have proposed a $250 emergency payment to seniors because there's no cost of living adjustment this year from Social Security. I just wonder, I mean, the reason Social Security didn't enact another COLA is because the cost of living didn't go up. So I just wonder how you justify spending $250 on it.
Look, we've seen an economy that has seen the savings of seniors as a result of investments change dramatically.
$250
going to
help with that, then?
I think it did when we did it in the Recovery Act, just like I think it did with Make Work Pay, and I think it would make a difference in the lives of seniors now, yes.
You mentioned the Making Work Pay tax cut, which obviously I think was about a third of the stimulus for these tax cuts.
Right. Making Work Pay was, if my math is correct, about 40 of the $290 billion in tax cuts, yes.
Okay, so you've had those tax cuts and the stimulus. Our poll, for example, continually shows people don't think health care is a good idea. I wonder if you feel any responsibility that Democrats are fighting so hard in these races and a lot of them, frankly, losing because of a failure to communicate on some of these policies, in particular, a lot of people not even knowing, for example, realizing that they got a tax cut.
Well, again, because in some of these places, you may have states and localities that have raised property taxes or raised different taxes in order to deal with budget gaps and budget deficits. In terms of Making Work Pay, we modeled Making Work Pay differently than tax cuts that had been done previously, where one check was mailed out, and when people get one check, they realize this is all we're getting. And in terms of that, it's harder to get that money back into the economy. If people get it spread out in a consistent way, and we know from economic data that that people tend to spend that money, that was the point of that tax cut. So
could that have been explained better? I mean, it's more of a political question as opposed to the substantive reasons why you designed it that way.
No, it was we did it based on the substance of wanting to get the economy moving. We've seen just in the last couple of days, fairly prominent Republican pollster, you mentioned health care, discuss why it's not such a good idea to talk about repealing health care reform, right? The seniors that got checks that to start beginning to close the donut hole, something that was left as part of the Prescription Drug Act that was passed in the early 2000s. That people up to 26 can stay on their parents' insurance, that for the first time they're making decisions, families are making decisions that are not at the mercy of a child that's sick, getting kicked off of their own health care. I think those are issues that make a real difference in people's lives.
You've spoken numerous times about the Republican failures to work with you on various issues. Given, looking ahead to next year, are you considering at all what the White House, if the White House needs a different approach in working with Republicans?
Well, look, we will continue to reach out to those on the other side of the aisle to get things done on behalf of the American people. We will, I did see, I think it was an ABC poll that demonstrated that the president, American people view the president as having, by about a 2-to-1 margin, the willingness to work with others to solve problems. The same poll shows that by a 2-to-1 margin, Republicans in Congress are not seen that way. So I think the actions of the Republican Party in deciding not to be part of helping on economic recovery, despite the fact that they have on occasion asked to be part of the spending on economic recovery, not doing anything on Wall Street reform and things like that, I think regardless of the outcome of the elections, people are going to, voters will expect that the two parties will work together to solve their problems. That's what they expected after 2006, after 2008, and that's, I think, what they're likely to expect after 2010.
You've just explained how you guys have done such a good job at that. So my question is whether, given voter expectations, you think that you should continue to approaching it the same way that you have, or whether the White House needs to change it?
I think we will continue to reach out to the other side of the aisle to solve the problems that the American people most want us to address. You'll have to ask Mitch McConnell, who stated quite clearly that the strategy was not to cooperate and to say no. You'll have to ask John Boehner, who, as I have used the example before, put out the statement opposing the stimulus as the president was about to load the motorcade to go to Capitol Hill to talk to the Republican caucus about the Recovery Act.
A quick thing coming off that. How do you see this changing with this influx of, I mean, you've acknowledged that Republicans are going to win seats, and a lot of them are going to be Tea Party candidates.
I don't want to get in the business of what the makeup is. I think that even as you look at voter preferences, looking underneath the numbers, people want the two sides to work together. They want us to address the issues that they face. You look back at, let's say, 1994, and if you look at the standing, look at the standing of the Republican Party leading into 1994 and leading into 2010, and you have a fairly stark difference in how the party is viewed. And I think that's because the Republican Party has, through its political strategy, not offered a series of alternative ideas. They've just said no.
Do you think that's going to get better? You have the president's re-elected in 2012. You have the Republican senators who are dealmakers.
The message from voters will be that we want people to solve problems.
Say that again and again, but I've asked this question to you before, and you don't take any responsibility for any of the problems. You think it's 100% on the Republican side. So how is that?
I think when you asked me this question last week, I said I am not up here to say we've done 100% of the things that we've done perfectly.
Right.
But Laura, there are two lanes, right, between here and the Capitol. One that goes this way and one that goes that way, right? When we were loading up the motorcade to go that way, the statement was coming this way, you know? When, I think it was with the New York Times, Mitch McConnell said, our strategy was to simply say no to everything. Am I surprised that there hasn't been massive political cooperation when the leaders of both parties have told newspaper reporters that their strategy is to say no to everything? No, I'm not that naive. I can read. That was their strategy, and it's been pulled off very effectively. That's why people don't have a great reverence for that political party. Peter.
Robert, a few minutes ago you said that you have a sense of what has to happen in the future. To what extent have you all been planning for the various midterm course correction scenarios that are going to happen in a couple of weeks?
In what way?
Well, to what extent has the White House been gaming, been planning how it's going to respond if, you know, if the Republicans take control of the House, if they make big gains in the Senate?
I have not been, and I don't know of a massive number of meetings on that. I think, Peter, we've been focused on what we have to do at hand. There'll be time for that later.
So you're going to wait until?
Well, again, it's not as if there aren't plenty of things to do in the next 2 weeks.
What's the point of having a trigger for cost of living increases for Social Security if every time that trigger isn't met, money just goes out anyway?
Well, I'd take into account the economic situation that we're in and understand, as I said earlier, that we've seen what happens and we've seen what has happened to people's life savings, to their investments, and to the struggles that they've had in this economy. Our belief was that that this is still something that is needed, and that's why it was proposed.
How closely is the administration involved in these regulatory reviews for foreclosures as far as if something arises that might need a policy remedy?
Well, again, we've had fairly regular meetings here. We have, like I said, the president, the president spent time specifically on this within the past week, even as FHA has several weeks ago begun looking into that process. We will, as these evaluation processes, these investigations conclude, we'll see what those show. I would be remiss if I didn't mention that some of this will ultimately fall to the role of the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, an office that, if we roll back Wall Street reform, won't exist. I think that's important as we move forward in ensuring that we have a voice that's on the side of consumers in this process.
Robert, two questions. Twice in recent weeks, the president has quoted from the Declaration of Independence and has omitted the Declaration's reference to rights, quote, endowed by their creator. Why did he omit this part of the Declaration?
I haven't seen the comments, Lester, but I can assure you the president believes in the Declaration of Independence.
Okay. In his interview with Rolling Stone, the president...
Are you a subscriber, Lester?
No. No.
I thought you might be slightly out of
it. In his interview with Rolling Stone, the president called Fox News, quote, destructive to the country. And my question, does he also believe that talk radio is destructive to the country, or is it only Fox News?
I don't remember the exact quote of the president's, Lester, but speech is obviously important in this country, but facts involved in that speech are equally important as we enter into these political debates. I think that's what his objection largely has been. John?
A federal judge in California has made it clear she's not going to probably uphold the stay of the injunction of Don't Ask, Don't Tell. And the president said recently that Don't Ask, Don't Tell will end on his watch. Mm-hmm. Is he or will he put pressure on Harry Reid, Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid, to push for a vote during a lame duck session, one? And two, depending on what happens after the midterms, how does the president see ending Don't Ask, Don't Tell if he has diminished majorities or no Democratic control?
Right. Well, first and foremost, in terms of, the process obviously with the judge will render on her own ruling. That then likely goes to a three-judge panel to consider. And we're certainly monitoring developments, as is the Department of Justice. The president believes that the policy will end under his watch precisely because in the Senate, in the defense authorization bill pending in the Senate, is a provision that would repeal what the president believes is unjust, what the president believes is discriminatory. It's passed the House. The president will push for defense authorization to be passed containing that provision when the Senate comes back from the lame duck. We have obviously a lot of important business in that legislation. The repeal of Don't Ask, Don't Tell is certainly one of those aspects. My sense is if you can get through a filibuster, and again, everything takes 60 votes these days, that there are a majority of U.S. senators that believe, as the president does, that this policy isn't right, and that it harms our national security. So the president will work during the lame duck to ensure that that bill is passed and that what's passed the House and what's passed in the Senate can end up on his desk for his signature. Jonathan, again, I think if we can get past the procedural hurdles that a majority of the U.S. Senate believes, as the president does, that it is time for this policy to change. The courts have the courts in a number of different instances out west have determined that the lifespan of this policy is coming to its natural end. I think that that was recognized in the House. I think it will be recognized in the Senate, and the bill, the law will be repealed.
If the president believes that, then why doesn't he repeal it now? Is he just waiting until after the election?
Well, we can't repeal it now because the Senate's not here. And remember, the law that was passed in the early 90s does not give the power to repeal the law to the commander-in-chief. It's a congressional action that can only be durably repealed through another legislative action. So I think the president was asked last Thursday at the town hall, why not simply sign an executive order like Harry Truman? The law that was passed, I guess in 1993, does not afford for executive action to remove the law.
But what if the Justice Department stands down on the Justice
Well,
Department?
Again, as we've said last week, the we believe the law should be repealed, and we believe that as the Pentagon studies a process for an orderly transition, that we think will come to pass and repeal the law.
Didn't the judge nullify the law?
Yes.
Well, then there is no law anymore.
Again, the earlier answer that I gave, which is that we believe that a process has to be put in place for that orderly transition.
Yes. Since the Justice Department is officially appealing the case, is it necessarily true that the president believes that Don't Ask, Don't Tell is a constitutional law?
I have enumerated for you the president's belief that that it's unjust, it's discriminatory, and that it harms our national security.
But you've never enumerated for us his belief on the constitutionality of
I'm confused, though. If it does end up in Congress going to a filibuster, would you guys force a filibuster? Because you've never done that before.
Force a filibuster. I don't know which.
Where you actually, if you're saying that if you can get through a filibuster, Republican filibuster in Congress,
right,
you've never actually forced a filibuster before. You've never vetoed or called the Republicans bluff on anything.
Well, maybe I'm confused at what you're. We have. The president will work to try to get 60 votes.
Would he force the Republicans to filibuster it?
The final passage of the bill, again, there has to be a vote to take. It's in the underlying bill. It's in the base bill. I think you can go back and find Republican quotes about the harm of not passing a defense authorization bill in the past and ensuring that we have the necessary resources for our military to do what it needs to do.
On the West Coast swing, I know you said that the White House is focused on the task at hand, not on looking at what happens after the elections. Mm-hmm. What's your wish list then for the next few days as you go out on this West Coast swing?
What
does President Obama hope to accomplish?
Well, I think he hopes to accomplish what he did over the weekend in Boston and in Ohio, in reminding reminding voters what's at stake, who has their best interest in mind, the steps that have been taken to get us out of the economic hole that we found ourselves in, and to continue to move forward on those policy decisions. That's, I think, been the basis for what he's talked to voters about over the past couple of weeks, and I expect that that will continue tomorrow and throughout the trip out west.
Robert, the Afghan-Pakistan meeting tomorrow, is President Karzai going to be part of that, the teleconference?
He's never been a part of those monthly meetings. I think on the guidance we'll put out the participants, and they generally include, they look a lot, the roster looks a lot like the Afghan policy review meetings of last fall.
And to what extent is there going to be an assessment of the peace feelers with the Taliban that we've been hearing and writing about?
Reconciliation led by the Afghans has been a topic of many of the past meetings. I can expect that we'll get an update from General Petraeus, Ambassador Eikenberry, and others on where they see the progress on those talks and their hopes for seeing that progress continue. I anticipate, as in the past, that will be a big topic tomorrow.
Robert. The New York Times has a story today that starts out with, what if a president cut Americans' income taxes by $116 billion and nobody noticed? They had a poll last month that said that fewer than 1 in 10 Americans knew that this administration had lowered taxes. Why hasn't the administration been able to effectively communicate that? And as you said, the president isn't changing his message.
I'm apparently failing in effectively being able to communicate that because I got that question like 2 rows ago. So apparently it's me. I can't get the same answer through about 9 different people. I'll try it one more time to underscore my personal ineffectiveness at communicating through an entire row of people, that we're in an economic situation that is unprecedented, that as the federal government cut taxes and we saw the economic impact of the making work pay tax cut into the paychecks of individuals, families, that went on to spend that money and increase consumer demand and increase consumer economic growth. That's not to say that people aren't making an evaluative decision on their entire financial outlook or whether or not the state or the locality that they live in had to raise taxes. We could have mailed checks in bulk, and when I mean in bulk, I mean the entire amount out. But economists found that when that happened in the past administration, most people tended to save and not spend that money. Our hope was to get that money into the economy. That's what has happened as a result of dividing that tax cut up and putting it into people's paychecks.
Robert, thank you. In the president's car ditch Slurpee metaphor that he's been using, he says that the idea here is that
as Mark appropriately pointed out, it now includes lattes.
And lattes. Yeah. The Republicans can ride along in the car, but they have to sit in the back seat. Is that language about firing up the base, or is he, or does
no,
President
we really not, mean they should sit in the back?
Or is the president believe that the
somebody
Republicans...
Somebody else called shotgun, and...
Or the Republicans are not...
Generational thing that clearly didn't go there. Go ahead, I'm sorry.
No, we got it.
I got it.
Yes, a couple of them. Hold on. Only because that was in last week's Rolling Snow. Go ahead. I'm sorry, Peter.
You funny.
I'll be here all weekend.
The president talked about the importance of reaching across the aisle. You mentioned it today. Is that kind of language conducive, though, to a constructive bipartisan relationship when the president says they can come along, but they got to sit in the back seat?
Well, look, Peter, I think the president has, as I said earlier, I think the president has on issues big and small, tried to work with and tried to offer opportunities for Republicans to work with Democrats in coming up with solutions for them. We're in a campaign season now, and I don't actually think the president thinks they're drinking a lot of Slurpees, but sorry. I think the president uses it as a metaphor for the role that Republicans have thus far played. Look, we're hopeful that regardless of the outcome, Republicans seek to participate in representative democracy. That's what the voters demand. I think that's what they'll hope to see regardless of the outcome of this election. George?
Yeah. The president's campaign message, though, does seem to be directed at Democrats. They reached the conclusion that this is a base election and the message should be directed at the base and the Democrats and not the independents.
Well, I think we are at a point in the election where we normally get to in every election where individuals are talking to their voters and trying to get them fired up and trying to get them out. I think that's what the president is working on doing. And I'd say, I don't know who was on the trip on Sunday. Seemed like a pretty big crowd to me. Okay.
The president's doing another backyard chat in Seattle. You know, I'm wondering how much have these backyard talks with, you know, everyday voters influenced his agenda? You know, is it changing, like, how he thinks, or, you know?
Well, look, this is, you know, from, you know, dating back more than 6 years, the president has done some form of, I think you could call this roughly a town hall meeting, where you hear directly from the concerns of and the interests of voters in America. He'll can certainly continue to do that. I think we hear the importance of cutting taxes on small businesses. We hear the importance of continue our education reforms. We hear a lot of issues that are not just important to the American people, but important to this administration. And we'll continue to pursue policies to ensure that we're making good on the promises that the president made just a few years ago running.
April. Robert, back on the midterms, what constitutes a win and or loss for the Democratic Party after November 2nd?
I'm not going to play predictor, April. I will have plenty of time to talk about what the results are.
I'm really not asking you to play predictor. I'm just asking you to define it, because the way I understand it, there is a historic effort in this midterm election season through the Democratic Party to push for the base to get out to vote. As I understand it, in years past, it had not been done. At least the last 12 years, it had not been done. So, and with that push, this historic push, there will be at least some, there'll be better than normal anticipation that the numbers will be higher than they were in the past. So that's why I asked, and I'm not asking you to predict, but there will be a little bit more movement than before.
Well, look, I think that the efforts of the campaign committees and the DNC, particularly at helping to fund those campaign committees, has reached a level of help that hasn't been seen certainly by those committees in any sort of recent memory. The amount of technology that's being used, the funds that go from the DNC or leftover funds from the president's campaign directly to the campaign committees that ultimately help campaigns, is unprecedented. The Democratic Party is working every day to increase enthusiasm and therefore increase turnout as we get closer to election.
Do you, on that note, do you expect that your base in certain communities, particularly where there are more African Americans, more youth, and maybe independents, that you will see a higher than normal poll
as compared to 2008, look, I will say this, that there rarely are instances in which the composition and the enthusiasm in a presidential year is obviously always different in an off-year election, by definition. They're different in special elections. It's our hope to take, in these races, a winning coalition and put them together for the Democratic candidate. That's not to say that the composition and the level, we're not going to have as many people vote in 2010 as we had in a presidential election, simply by definition of the fact that they're off-year elections.
Did the president agree with David Cameron's contention last night in their phone call that the UK would still have a first-rate military after the defense cuts? I noticed that it didn't say that he did during the readout you put out.
I can certainly check the readout, but I think that our view is that the level of help and cooperation that we get and the sacrifice of that country in places like Afghanistan is certainly vital and important to our coalition, and that that they will indeed continue to have a first-rate military.
May I follow up, Robert? Mm-hmm. Since that call, today Britain announced the defense budget will fall 8%. Is the president still confident, knowing that the amount of troops, planes, tanks, et cetera, will be cut by that kind of a figure?
Again, I think it's safe to assume that some discussions prior to that phone call that led us to believe that indeed readiness and the capability of the British military would continue.
Thank you.
Thanks, Robert.
Yep. In this busy campaign season, how is President preparing for his trip to India next month, and what does he want to achieve during his trip there?
Well, and we'll have a chance to go through some of the briefings on this in the days upcoming. But look, obviously, this is an important relationship. It was the first state dinner that was held here. I think that gives you a degree of understanding in terms of the significance that this government and this administration puts on that relationship. We will have, it's an important economic relationship. It is, which again, we'll have a chance to go through. So the president is involved in fairly regular meetings with the national security team to ensure a successful visit not long after the elections. It's an important trip. We understand, look, just from the viewpoint economically, we understand what we have to do to create jobs, to grow our exports, to ensure that it just doesn't fall on American consumers to drive world demand. That's a lot of what you'll hear the president talk about on that trip, and hopefully have some tangible results from it. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.